When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
I'm gonna buy a new guitar, neck and legged with pearl, to pay my passage to the underworld. I'm gonna crawl up from the afterbirth and wander lonely on this earth. Satan, cast your evil spell. Save a place for us in hell. You must learn we're all gonna burn, because you can't unmurder someone. We electrocuted a lamb for the keys to the kingdom. Now it's time to burn. 2, 3, 4.
Hey, all you rockers, hacks, and has-beens out there. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Penny.
And I'm Jade. Rock on!
Ow! And this is Murder Magnets, a podcast dedicated to the Peacock original show, Poker Face.
This episode, we're covering Poker Face, Season 1, Episode 4, Rest in Metal, directed by Tiffany Johnson and written by Christine Boylan.
You may now unwrap your Sucker Punch lollipops.
That you've been holding on to this whole time.
Yep, it's time for dessert, if y'all.
If you couldn't wait, then hopefully there's still some left. All right, Poker Face Season 1, Episode 4, Rest in Metal, Moment to Die For, Penny.
Not surprisingly, I really liked the Esky character.
Yeah.
And one of my most favorite moments is when they're in the RV and he says, you know, Ruby's talking about, you know, we got to get back on top. And he's like, I just moved back in with my mom and I got my AARP card this year.
It's been a banner
membership this year.
Banner year.
It's been a banner year. And then she's like, oh, you think studying law is going to law school is going to change that? And he goes, law school? You think I can afford law school? This is an online MSL degree. I can't even afford to sell out.
Aw, poor Esky.
And I got to tell you, law school is freaking expensive, you guys.
Yeah.
I spent, I came out of law school with $180,000 in debt.
Ooh.
I'm sure it's even more now. I mean, of course it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, now it's yeah, probably more. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that he looks so kind of imposing, and yet he was so meek and chill and kind of insecure. It's funny.
He has a sacred commitment to veganism. my moment to die was the realization that Charlie is merch girl. I was like, yeah, she is.
Merch girl.
Because, yeah, as we were saying last time, now I'm starting to look for it. And I was looking for it on episode 4. I was like, okay, Charlie's already here. But wait, how is she already here? And I could not think of how she could already be there, because they're on the road and they're on tour. And I'm like, well, you don't see her in the tour bus. So where is she? She's not there. How does she, you know, where does she show up? And
roadie.
Yeah, she's merch girl. She's the roadie.
Merch girl.
Oh, it's so great. And yeah,
merch girl working all night.
Yeah,
merch girl.
I liked the
last one to leave.
Yeah, I liked the lyrics that and I was really trying to kind of read into the lyrics because the song's about Charlie. So she's like, doing just fine, nothing up her sleeve. Like, I thought that was funny because there is always something up her. I don't know if that was a poker reference or not, if you know, because you got a card up your sleeve or something. But in reality, Charlie always has something up her sleeve. You know, she's like the superpower. So I thought that was a really cool, you know, the way that the lyrics kind of were. And she said, God, that merch girl song, slanderous, you know, yeah. It was like insulting to her.
Uh-huh. That was fun.
Don't get me started on that merch girl song.
I liked how when in the, is it like an RV, a tour RV? I was gonna say tour van.
Yeah, Esky calls it a van, and I'm like, it looks like a motorhome to me. But
so the band is trying to come up with a new song, playing some chords, or getting a groove going, and then they hear Gavin laughing in the back, watching a sitcom on his iPad, and Al goes, "Where'd you get this kid?" And Ruby goes, "Juilliard, really? Fucking Craigslist. Where'd you think?" Which was really funny. And then later at the restaurant with Charlie, she's like, self-taught, and he goes, "No, Juilliard."
Oh my God, I know.
That got me.
I cracked up.
And Charlie's face was like,
"Oh, all right." Yeah, right. I better reevaluate you. All right, what is this one about, Penny?
Former metal star Ruby Ruin wants to be back on top more than anything, hoping she can leave her unhappy job at Buildbox forever. She hires Charlie to come on tour with her band Doxology for 3 weeks as the merch girl. When the band's new drummer, Gavin, shares Sucker Punch, a catchy song he's working on, with the rest of the band, they decide to steal it and rig an amp to electrocute Gavin on stage at one of their shows. Charlie notices some lies, as she does, and having befriended Gavin, investigates his death. As she figures out the story, she unfortunately appears in a viral video, and Cliff shows up to take her back to Sterling Frost. She manages to get away and hands her evidence over to the Murder Girl podcast.
Yay podcasters!
The band, excited to be signing a deal for their new hit song, are thwarted by the podcast and some YouTubers who've identified the tune as the theme from Benson. Copyright infringement, fraud, and murder.
Murder.
That's amazing.
Murder.
All right. My number one is Sucker Punch. So when Gavin's in the back of the tour van watching Benson, I was like, Benson, that was a great show. And of course, it's a spinoff. Well, not of course. I bet you no one even knows this. It's a spinoff of the show Soap, which was a favorite show of mine in the
80s. That's my favorite show.
It was created and written. Every episode was completely written by Susan Harris, who went on to do Golden Girls. But she also created Benson. And because this Robert Guillaume played Benson on Soap, and he was the butler, a smart mouth butler. And he was just the standout character. So they took him off and gave him his own series. And anyway, so I'm very aware of that show. And as soon as Gavin was listening to the theme song, which is super catchy, I was like, one of them is going to accidentally write a song with that melody. That was my first thought. And then he played it when, you know, he had this great song and played it for them in the hotel room. I'm like, yeah, it's Benson. And so then the revelation at the end kind of fell flat for me, you know, but it was fine. It was good. I mean, I don't care. But I was like,
you had a glass onion moment.
That's Benson. Yeah, it was a totally glass onion thing. Yeah. And I think that's super common, by the way, for rock stars to write a tune that they think is original but is accidentally derivative of something. I've noticed my favorite all-time band is Weezer, and they do that a lot. Like Rivers Cuomo does it all the time. Sometimes it feels shamelessly, but he claims to only realize it later. But anyway,
Gavin claims.
No, Rivers Cuomo of Weezer.
Oh, okay. I was like, Gavin never said it.
Like, there's some songs that are just directly lifted. Uh-huh. And he like, one of his most famous songs of Weezer is called Say It Ain't So. And years later, he's like, oh, shit, that's from Metallica. That bass riff is totally from Metallica. But anyway, the song Sucker Punch, the moment Gavin brings it to the band is like, can I play this for you? And they're like, well, we don't have anything else. Go ahead. And he starts singing it. And it's one of those moments, like you pointed out, Jade, in episode 2, where she faints, you know, the lighting changes and everything. And here you just see the spotlight on Ruby, the lead singer of the band, because she's realizing this is a huge hit. But we don't, because the sound changes, we actually don't get to hear Gavin singing it, which is great because it captures the emotion of her hearing her future hit more than hearing any actually song could, you know.
It's, it was like, so effective.
Yeah. And I just think it's great also that the song is called Sucker Punch because they kill him, and that feels like the most, like the ultimate sucker punch. So
and kind of the way that it thwarts them at the end, they kind of get sucker punched
by
sucker punch. They sucker punch them on their own selves in the face. Yeah. Classic villain.
Who wants to go next?
First, I want to build on what you said and just say that I think, you know, the scene where Charlie figures out that the lyrics to Sucker Punch came from all the like food and candy wrappers and the caverns thing was clearly a Usual Suspects reference. Oh, yeah.
I like that.
I hadn't thought
so
of that.
So I got all excited and I yelled out loud, guys are so sick! anyway.
Nice call.
So my first point is middle age, which I'm feeling right now. So there was a whole bunch of middle age stuff. So first, Ruby says to Gavin, we're all in our 40s, take a bath. Because Gavin is very committed to the barefoot lifestyle and is pretty grubby. He's like, it's metal!
I'm not joking.
No, fucking take a bath.
Yeah, take a bath. Al, who, by the way, is played by John Darnielle, who's the founder of the Mountain Goats, which is a band I really enjoy.
Me too.
I looked him up, and it turns out he's also a novelist, and he wrote a book that came out in 2022. I just want to read you guys the description of it. It depicts true crime author Gage Chandler working on an unsolved double homicide committed in the satanic panic of the 1980s. Further discussing the moral implications that arise as a result of working in the genre. Darnielle uses metafiction to tell Devil House's story. The novel is set largely in California towns of Milpitas and San Luis Obispo, where Darnielle was raised. It debuted on the New York Times bestseller list February 13th at number 7, staying on the list for 2 weeks. And it's called Devil House, and I'm going to buy it and read it because it sounds awesome. Makes up lyrics about whatever is in his head, and the first example we get of that is, you say you want a deal, but you're such a phony, you're never gonna get that alimony.
Oh my god, I already said
the thing about Esky moving back in with his mom and getting his AARP membership. I also got my AARP membership this year. When Gavin wants to party with them, Esky's like, I gotta be up early, man. And Al says, acid reflux. And then Ruby says, sober 10 years. And then Al has sciatica, so he's very particular about how his mic stand is set up to avoid hunching. Deuteronomy, who's their roadie, says, you know, I offered to teach him Pilates that I learned from Jimmy Page, which I enjoyed as just a name drop. I really identified with, like, these people who are in middle age, and it's just like, everything is harder. Like, I'm tired. My shoulder hurts. Mm. Like, middle age sucks.
I mean, we need to say all the lyrics of Al's confessional music, which is...
Oh, well, that's the confessional one. That's a separate thing.
Well, you said...
I wanted to say all the lyrics to Al's divorce song.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Living on discount macaroni.
I didn't write down the rest of them.
Yeah. Go for it, Jason. And I would like you to sing it for me, please.
I can't remember the tune, but it was good. I remember that.
It was just like, no, macaroni.
Living on discount macaroni. Yeah, can't even get a job with my Uncle Tony. You sent your goons to repo my truck. What the actual fuck? I can't sing it. I can play guitar, and I'm a decent singer. Now cut my wedding ring off my dead finger. You say you want a deal, but you're such a phony. You're never going to get that alimony.
Yes.
And I love this guy because he just, you can tell he's channeling it, right? He didn't come up with those words. They're coming out of him. And so later, I'm going to skip to this because it just gels right in with this, but after they killed Gavin, then he's like, I'm gonna buy a new guitar, neck inlaid with pearl, to pay my passage to the underworld. I'm gonna crawl up from the afterbirth and wander lonely on this earth. Satan, cast your evil spell, save a place for us in hell. You must learn we're all gonna burn because you can't unmurder someone. We electrocuted a lamb for the keys to the kingdom. Now it's time to burn. And Charlie's right
now
there
it's
going,
time to burn. Oh god,
so metal.
Yeah.
And then when she confronts Ruby, she's like, Al is writing a new song called You Can't Unmurder Someone.
But when he started singing it, I was like, this is a good one. He's like, I'm going to buy a new guitar, neck inlaid with pearl. And I was like, it's in my head, man. I like that melody, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got some good writers for this show.
Well, John Darnielle wrote these songs. Yeah. John Darnielle of the Mountain Goats. And I don't know if this is... if this is intentional or not, but one of their kind of big, like, I don't know, hit song, but they have a song about divorce, the Mountain Goats, called There Will Be No Divorce. And I thought it was funny because this song is, he's saying, like, you'll cut my wedding ring off my dead finger, meaning, like, you're not getting this ring, or maybe you're not getting this divorce. And that's, yeah, like, the theme of his other, one of another one of their songs.
I'm sure
check
it
out
inspired,
the Mountain Goats.
Inspired the writers, yeah.
Yeah, those, if you know, you know, you know? To quote Damien there. If you know, you know. Yeah, check out the Mountain Goats. They're great.
All right, Jade?
All right, well, I really want to talk about this Gavin fellow. I enjoyed him so very much.
So
Nicholas Cirillo. Oh, man, I watched him on Outer Banks. He's great. He is.
I also want to mention he played Cousin Ched on She-Hulk.
Yes.
And I podcasted on She-Hulk with Greg, and you can find that on Podcastica.
Do it.
.com.
Do it. If you're smart, you will do it. Yeah, he was on She-Hulk series, the film Ida Red, Teenage Bounty Hunters, and he was in one episode of Stranger Things and one episode of The Act. And when I saw that, I was like, damn, that was a good show. Patricia Arquette, y'all, if you want some disturbing content, watch The Act, but disturbing in the best way. It's a great show. Very well acted. I won't go into it, but I could. It's good. Patricia Arquette is my goddess.
I like that.
Very much like Natasha Lyonne.
I could. It's good.
Yeah. All right. Put it on a shirt. Okay. Man, I just got my second wind. Woo! We've been marathon podcasting, y'all, and now I'm kind of to the point where, like, my computer screen is looking weird. And
this is, like, my
kind of
fifth hour
it.
Today. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Jason. I forgot you've been... Wow. Round of Rock applause, on. Ladies and gentlemen, for the true marathon podcast. That's dedication. All right, well, okay, back to Gavin.
Gavin.
Yes. So I like to think of Gavin as he's kind of the human version of MAGA dog. Of fascist dog without the fascist racist homophobicness, of course, but you know, he's annoying, he's super problematic, he's extremely obnoxious, but Charlie takes him in anyway, you know. Charlie's gonna be nice to him. So when we first meet Gavin, he's got his feet up on the table, he's got no shoes on, dirty as hell, and he's like he's eating someone else's yogurt and he's like tonguing it in this gross
I mean way. That bothered me more than any like slasher movie gut scene. I wanted to punch him in the face.
I know. I literally said out loud, I was like, oh God, no.
No.
Stop it. When he was
and then
like,
I had to watch it the second time and I'm like,
oh no. It was bad. Anyone who eats yogurt like that, yeah, there's a special place in hell reserved for you.
Do you
and
have
that's the
misophonia?
Reason that I was okay with him dying.
Do you know what that is? Misophonia?
We've discussed this. My mama has it. Yes, I very much know what misophonia is. It's a real thing, and I
have it. If I hear people smacking their, you know, it makes me want to punch them in the face.
So where was I? Where did I leave off? Oh, yeah, I loved him. Okay, I just love so many things about him. Like, I just love this performance. It's so layered. It's so, you know, as they say, lived in. He is just... He's such a real person. I know this guy. I know many of the Gavins of the world. And I just love how enthusiastic he is. He genuinely worships the band, you know, and he doesn't see how he's insulting, how, you know, his remarks can be taken as very insulting because he's just so unaware and oblivious and young and like crazy,
overflowing,
all over the place.
Hyper exuberant, like
right. And everything he's saying is just genuine and from the heart, and it's meant to him as a compliment when he's like, "I've been a diehard Docs fan since I was like 2 years old, dude." My mom said she'd catch me banging my sippy cup to Staplehead, and Ruby is just like, "Yeah, look thanks." Off. Thanks for reminding me how old I am. Mm-hmm. And then he's like also insensitive when he's like, why don't you just try to write another song like Staplehead? Because Staplehead was, you know, good. So why don't you just write another song like that? And she's like, yeah, why don't I just go out into the forest and capture a bejeweled fucking Pegasus? And he was like, that would also be awesome.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I just fell in love with him. You know, at first I was
a bit Bill and Ted, which is great.
I have no idea what that means.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
No idea.
Everyone else.
Yeah, you gotta over catch the head up on that.
Else hearing me.
Okay.
Wow.
Oh, that got the wow from Air Penny. Guitar. So now it's going on the list. Okay. All right. Yeah. I will watch this.
It's Keanu Reeves' first movie.
Yeah.
First big movie. Well, that's not a big sell because he's not the greatest actor, in my opinion.
Actually,
anyway.
In this, you might like him. You might like
him. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I could see
it. It's the best possible use of
Okay, you're selling me now.
Yeah.
All righty.
I can agree with that.
Anyway, back to Gavin. Sorry, guys. We'll really try to stay on task here. So he's very unaware. He's very oblivious. He says all these insulting things that he doesn't mean to insult. And then he's got this self-awareness. And the moment that I started to fall in love with him, because when he came out the gate tongue in that yogurt, I was like, we are going to have a problem, sir, and I'm probably going to be okay with you dying. But then when he said, I know that I'm a lot to put up with, so thank you guys for putting up with me, I was like, aw, because I say that all the time, and thank you guys for putting up with me.
Yeah, self-awareness. My talkativeness. Super helpful.
My tardiness, you know, thank you for putting up. Thank you. You get me. It's all part of the charm. No, you know, it's good to have that about you. And he knows, you know, he knows that he's not everybody's cup of tea. And and then when Charlie calls Ruby a dick, Gavin is like so sweet and he defends Ruby even after she beat him up and like made him his head bleed when he's trying to get like blood on his amp, you know, he's like, it's so metal. And yeah, so she says, you know, Ruby's a dick, and he's like, nah, Ruby's cool, she's all right. I was like, oh, he worships her, you know. And a couple little other fun things that he does is like he takes photos, as he says, for his mind collage. He doesn't post them anywhere. And this is actually something that I said to someone who were asking me, why don't you post on social media more? And I was like, that's not why I take photos. I take them for myself, like for my own enjoyment, and which is the old school way to have a relationship with photos, I feel. Most of the time, I think that people take photos nowadays to look at me. Yeah, yeah, like, oh, I have to Instagram this. And, you know, I will take a photo when the moment inspires me. And or when I'm vibing with someone that I just met and I'm like, let's take a photo together. And then they go, tag me. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to post it. And I'm like, you can post it if you want, but I wasn't going to post it. I just wanted to have a photo of you just to have, you know. So I like that. I liked his little philosophy that we get from him. If you're wearing shoes, you're not grounded. Life's a beat, Chuck. You just got to feel it. Ba-da-da-whoosh. Ba-da-da-whoosh. And then he's like tapping like the little raindrops. And he's doing another one. He's like, that's the bridge we just went over.
Yeah.
Like, he's a true artist, you know? He's
He's got a vibe with the, like, that thing about if you're not wearing shoes, you're not grounded, sounds like, oh yeah, whatever.
If you're wearing shoes,
weirdo.
You're not.
Yeah, if you're wearing shoes, that's right.
Well, that's foreshadowing.
But, it is.
Yeah.
But also, take off your shoes and feel the ground sometime.
Yeah, I
feel
have
yourself.
Been saying this my whole life. Yeah.
Like, it's real.
I love being barefoot.
Yeah,
it's
you can
best.
Actually, like, feel like we're getting all hippie now, but it's
no,
nice
it's
to just
thing.
Sit there in your bare feet and feel, you know, feel your feet on the ground.
Yep.
That's all I'm saying.
I highly agree. Don't do it now in the freezing cold, though, because that would not be good. Would not be fun. And he goes on to say, sometimes I just feel shit so hard, it carries me through, makes the bad stuff just roll right off of me. I loved that.
That was his
you know?
Most likable moment, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that just as
the actor,
I was really
more than anything.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, of course. Just as I was really starting to love Gavin, he died, and I was bummed, yeah. But I knew it was coming. Yeah. It
did
was,
you
he
like you
me,
said, and when you said the yogurt, you're like, I'm not going to mind seeing him die. Did you know right away that was the victim?
Not at that moment, but pretty soon after, I could tell that this has got to be the guy. This has got to be our victim. Like, who else? Mm. You know. But I wasn't. I'm not at all bummed at the fact that I knew, because again, that's not what the show's about.
Yeah,
it's not about. How's the murder going to happen? It's all about, you know, how
it's
Charlie's going to catch him.
Enjoy the show. Yeah.
And yeah, that. Mm-hmm. Totally. So yeah, Nicholas Cirillo, you did an excellent job, sir. This was very, very good for him.
Yeah.
I loved Gavin.
I agree. My second point is also Gavin. I loved his character. I think the most important, the most interesting thing to me about him is how my perception of him changed over the course of the episode, because I fucking hated him at first. It went from bad to good, basically annoying to likable, dubious to talented. That first scene with eating the yogurt, I was so upset. Oh my God. And I think that was, you know, on purpose. They did such a masterful job with him. And the way he's so over the top when Ruby comes in and he can't control himself, like bowing down literally. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's something kind of affable about that. But for the most part, it's like, or at least there's a part of me that's like, okay, she's trying to hire you as her drummer. If you're flipping out that much, then how great can you be yourself if you think you're that low, you know? And maybe that's just me, but I'm like, when you're in a job interview, if you're so deferential, then you're not really building yourself up. And it kind of reminded me, I used to do, many people know these Walker Stalker panels where I would interview celebrities on stage, and I had to remind myself at first, don't act like that, just be chill, you know. Don't. And one time I went backstage and saw one of my co-moderators with Giancarlo Esposito just going, I love everything you're in, and blah blah, and I'm like, dude, just come here.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of a thing, you know, like you gotta be cool. Anyways, she didn't.
He's really young, though.
He is, and it's yeah, 22 like or yeah, something. And it, yeah. And there is a part of me that's like, oh, whatever. He's just being genuine, and so there is a part of me that's like that.
He seems like a puppy.
He really does.
Yeah, like he's literally the human version of Magadog without the loving
with the racism.
Radio.
Yeah. He is. Yeah. Yeah, there's no filter there.
Yeah.
Woof,
completely,
woof.
Completely obnoxious and completely problematic,
but
and annoying.
In a much more lovable way.
Taking other people's food,
yeah
totally.
Ruby doesn't even audition him; just says you're in. So I'm
I know
like,
I was okay.
What if he
I was
can't
wondering.
Even play.
I was wondering this, and what I thought immediately, as soon as I asked that question, because that was my very first. What? How is she hiring him? But then I thought, no. As a performer myself, everything is online, so I'm
digital.
Sure she, yeah. So if he responded to an ad, he probably put his YouTube channel or his Instagram where she's seen him play.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure she has.
I think technically that must have happened, but they left it out because it wasn't interesting to the plot. But also, it just made her seem all the more desperate. Like, okay, fine, you have your own equipment, you're in, you know. But you're right, like, no one would ever hire someone without knowing that they could play, for sure. In the tour van when they're, oh no, I already said that part. So then things start to shift for me as far as my estimation of this guy. When they're on the road, we see he's a great drummer.
Oh,
he's like, and I'm like, okay, Ruby got lucky there, or you know, she saw his digital whatever video, YouTube video. When the guy threw the stapler at his head during the Staplehead song, and he played through it, and I felt like he was almost like, fuck yeah. This is
oh
metal.
Yeah, he loved it.
Blood's
like,
coming
so
down
metal.
My head.
He loved it.
Wow!
He literally said, where were they? Cleveland, Ohio or something? He's like, we love you.
Yeah. That's what got him to so stoked to do the Staplehead scream.
To take the scream, yeah.
Then got him punched in the face. Then he wants to party in the hotel room, and then he's poor guys with all these middle-aged downers. And then when he starts hanging out with Charlie, that makes him cool by association in my book. And I love that it turned out it was Charlie Stapler, the guy threw at Gavin. Then she uses the super glue trick on him, which is awesome. Then he's being, you know, she finds out he got taught at Juilliard. And he says, you sir are a magpie. And I was trying to figure out what that meant. I think it means someone who samples and takes things all around him and uses them.
Yeah, like imitates, mimics.
Mimics, okay. Yeah.
That's what magpies are famous for.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
Mimicking birds.
Makes sense. So, yeah, then she realizes he wrote Sucker Punch because she sees all these objects around that he took items, sugary sweet, fiery treat.
And I am of the mindset that I don't even know that I don't think he intentionally did any of it. I think that he just, like he says, he just soaks, absorbs his environment. Yeah. And it comes out of him.
But he's aware because when he's saying about the raindrops in the car and showing how. Influences drumming, but it just happens though. It's not like,
what I mean is he's not like a plagiarist.
Yeah.
You know? And
Charlie's like, holistic magpie motherfucker.
Yeah.
Then at the end, when Charlie confronts the band with all the evidence that she has that they're the killers, and she goes, Gavin was the real deal. He was a good guy.
He was metal.
Yeah, and it's like,
you're the opposite of metal.
Real
you're
metal.
Talc.
That yeah, just, you're talc. Like, you hear me? You're fucking talc.
I love that I just love when a character can change it in my estimation like that, where he starts off, I just hate him and think he's the lowest of the low, and or maybe not quite that low, but nothing, you know.
That yogurt then, really was, it was, yeah, it was bad. It was,
and it really colored what happened next too. And then but by the end, I'm just like, what a fucking great guy. That's a good episode of TV. And it all makes sense.
And a talent.
Yeah, the talent.
Like, it's so sad to lose this talented musician. Although, like,
I always want to try to...
Inadvertent.
Yes. And I try to, well, I'm getting too personal here, but just, you know, stay open to people. You never know when someone's going to surprise you. That's what this episode just reinforces to me. Like, you have a first impression of somebody, but if you just go with that and close yourself down, you might miss something good. Might not, but you might.
That's so true. I really get the sense that Gavin can, like, take criticism too. Like, he can be taught, you know?
Absolutely. The fact that he had that camera down there just to show his footwork.
Yeah.
So he could review it later shows how dedicated he is to his craft and he wants to learn, you know? He wants to improve.
Which is kind of why it was shocking to me when I really thought about this. I'm like, this really does seem to be, like, one of his favorite bands. He's like, I'm such a big fan of yours. And they're freaking hacks. They have one hit. What are you worshiping? I was confused by that, but I tried not to think too hard on it.
Well, yeah, that's another thing is, sometimes people really get into stuff that isn't that great, in my opinion. But that's just the way it goes.
That is true. That is the world we live in.
Yeah. Maybe they're really good musicians.
Yeah.
Penny?
So my second point was also about Gavin, but specifically Gavin and Charlie's relationship and how fun it was to watch it develop. You know, starting with her just, like, you know, patching him up after he gets hit in the head with a stapler, which, who is the psycho who throws a metal stapler?
That guy who is like, play staplehead. The way he said that line cracked me up. I was like, this extra is taking, I mean, not, he's not an extra, but, you know, he got hired to walk one line. And I was like, I can just see this actor being so fucking excited to do this.
I'm gonna fucking nail this.
He knew that character. He milked it. That was great.
I used to go back when I was really like 21, 22, I'd go to this. We'd go to the same bar every week, and there was one guy that would always show up in the middle of every song. He would say, Slayer!
Oh my God.
Oh God, no. We talked about how he intentionally bleeds on his amp for it to be, you know, metal. When they're in the car, he's like a slob, right? He, like, eats something and just, like, throws the trash behind him. And Dick. Charlie's like, not to be all Felix Unger or anything, but this is my house, so show some respect.
It's Odd Couple, by the way, kids.
Yeah, Felix Unger. And the shoe thing and that you already talked about. And he's like, why do you live in your car? And she says, I got wolves on my fender, so I got to keep moving.
We almost called the podcast
and he says,
that,
are you gonna...
Yeah. I was like, oh, there it is. Good line.
That's the line from the trailer. he's like, are you going to be like that forever? And Charlie has this like existential moment where she's like, oh, I don't know. I haven't thought about that. I loved when Charlie went to Ruby on Gavin's behalf and sort of challenged her to stop being such a jerk. And she said, you know, I expected traveling with the band to be fun, not this clicky high school gatekeepy bullshit. And I was so glad she said it because I fucking hate gatekeepers. Mm-hmm. They were like that, who were just like, I'm too cool and you don't get to be in my club. Like, fuck you.
Yep.
And the Kaiser Soze thing, which made me really happy. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. Gavin is pretty adorable by the end. I agree with both of you.
Yep.
Nice. Penny? I mean, Jade? You're Jade.
Yeah, so this, you set it up perfectly, as we always do, to go into my next point. Let's talk about Ruby. So, yeah. Oh man, okay.
This work.
Chloe Sevigny. Do I love this woman? I don't know if, you know, I'm sure our listeners are aware she was in Russian Doll and she played Natasha Lyonne's mom in season 2. She's just freaking incredible. She, I guess, was also in The Girl from Plainville, which another reason I need to watch this apparently. And she was in Bones and All recently, the film Bones and All, and We Are Who We Are. So
started off in Kids.
Yeah, that's right.
That's such a disturbing movie.
Fucking movie.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
And American Horror Story season 2, which was very fucked up, but she was great in it.
Yeah, I need to watch American Horror Story, especially.
And Big Love.
Yeah,
for Big something
Love, yeah.
Really different.
With Bill Paxton.
Yeah. Yeah, she's just, she can do no wrong as far as acting goes. That she gave the character such, okay, so there's like this quality about Ruby that kind of bothered me, made me myself, my own thoughts were bothering me, because I think it's just Chloe Sevigny, I always pronounce her name wrong, it's Sevigny, because I didn't hate, it's like, okay, she's horrible, of course, but I for some reason kind of was rooting for her a little bit. I don't know, because I understood her, you know what I'm saying? So I'll set it up. Yeah.
I mean, let me just say one thing.
Am I alone here? I'm alone here, aren't I?
No. I mean, she tasted this moment of adulation and she wants it back. And that's the whole crux of the matter with her. And I won't go too into, because it's your point. I don't want to step on you. But I will say that at the end, when the Sucker Punch song is successful, I felt like, oh, cool. They got to taste their moment. I hope they go to jail forever. But
yeah.
It felt good that they actually got to recapture some of that for a minute there.
Yeah, I think it was excellent storytelling and writing, the way that we got so close up, just like with on every episode, we're getting so much out in such little time out of the depth of these characters. She's this aging rock star. She's super bitter and sour. She's past midlife crisis point. She's straight into depression at this point. You know, she's completely lost her enthusiasm. She's the antithesis to Gavin, you know, she's desperate. And Gavin is all passion and all heart. And she is she's down to calculating, scheming, will lie, cheat, and steal to get my,
and
to
kill.
Have my, yeah, and kill, to have my moment. She's definitely the most upset. She's got anger behind her more so than Alan asking.
What makes her hard to empathize with is that Charlie's right. She's a hack. Like, she never really had the talent. So she got this adulation without really earning it. I mean, not totally, because she's a good singer, right? She didn't create the song, but she performed the fuck out of it. So let's give her that. But still, like, it feels like a little bit like you didn't really earn that, and now you just want to steal another song just to get that feeling back. So
yeah, right.
It's hard to sympathize with her too much.
I feel like the reason I not sympathized with her, but I just got her. I just understood how
I understand it.
You know, that feeling of like desperation and this, like, you know, Sterling Frost, like so many things, it's a theme. This is their last hope. I was gonna say Taffy, their last chance, you know. And she says, I have nothing left in my garbage life except this one last shot. She's not ready to lay down and die as some fucking nostalgia act, as she says.
Right.
And she's fucking ruthless. She's punches Gavin for stealing her scream. She's pissed, you know? But I loved when she was talking with the guys in the band about what would you do to get that moment back? The first time she talks about the first time she heard Staplehead, it was like a needle made of ice going into her brain. She saw the face of God. She had at one time an appreciation like Gavin to worshiping music, and music is her life and it means so much to her, or it did. It, you know, it was a part of her. And I could like hear those words when they zoomed in on her face in that spotlight moment when Gavin was singing his song for the first time. I could hear those words that she was saying. It was like a needle made of ice going into her brain. Face of God. It's a hit. Fuck, you know?
Yeah.
I need this. So I connected with her in a way that like disturbed me, you know? And I think it's Chloe Sevigny's fault for being who she is, because she's amazing. And yeah, she didn't play a great character on Russian Doll either, but I totally...
Oh, no.
I really liked her there too.
I so admire actors who will play... Like, you know, it's a theme with me. Flawed characters, great. There's some actors who don't want to play flawed characters. They only want to play heroes. And I'm just like, whatever, dude.
That's not fun. For
weak.
No. Yeah. Weak. Give me a villain role any day.
Come on.
I would so much rather. Yeah.
But both are fine. But if you only want to do that, or you want to turn your character who was a racist into a hero because you can't handle the ego hit of some people not liking you, then
pfft. When I hear that scripts have been rewritten because some actors won't, no, not cool, man, not for me.
And some actors just love it. Like, Dennis O'Hare, he seems to really dig into those flawed roles, you know.
I don't know. I can't get a face. Dennis O'Hare.
Well, I know he was in True Blood. Did you watch that?
Yeah, yeah.
The vampire, the main like lead vampire
that's
guy,
him.
Russell.
Excellent.
So good.
So okay, back to Ruby. She's hard to like though in her behavior towards Gavin. Like she immediately has. She's not a good person. She immediately has the idea to kill for the song immediately after hearing it. When they're like, it's a fucking hit. And she's like,
bad.
It doesn't have to be. Yeah. She's like, that's immediately.
And it was
where
set up just
goes.
Perfectly. Their old drummer wrote their hit song, took it, all the royalties. Now their new drummer wrote a hit song. Well, fuck him.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even. Yeah.
We're not going through that again.
Yeah, I didn't even connect that. Yeah, she immediately has this idea and. I hated it when she was like, Gavin's a vibe killer, you know, he can't read a room. It stresses me out. He just doesn't care that he worships her and he's even defending her behind her back, you know, when Charlie calls her a dick. I loved when Charlie called her out for being gatekeepy. And I was like, yeah, you are. You're petty as hell. And yeah, she doesn't even feel bad about killing. After she does it, she says, we did what we did and now we have to move forward. I'm like, well.
Yeah. You're like a sociopath.
Like a sociopath, yeah. It was kind of freaky. And and really icky.
Although, isn't that kind of metal?
Well, that's the question. I am not a metal fan.
Like a blasé murderer? I'm not a metal person, so I don't know what's metal.
I feel like
not.
That's offensive to people
Let's
who like metal.
Let's kill our competition out of desperation!
No, because Gavin's metal, and he's all about like... Let's bleed together. Yeah. I think that it's just like passion, man. I don't think it's necessarily he loves murder. You know,
so,
Gavin ain't no murderer.
I'm going to get, I've had a few drinks. I'm going to relate this to my own experience. But so I'm a podcaster. I want a shit ton of downloads. And I love when more and more people download my podcasts and listen to what I'm saying. But I try to hold on to what made it fun in the first place, which is ignoring all of that and just enjoying the moment and having fun with it and hoping that that stuff comes as a byproduct of it, right? I always said, if we're having fun with this, that's the most important thing. And then if other things come, that's awesome. I have a small threshold of downloads that I think are worthwhile to keep doing it. So if you guys don't meet that, we're out of here.
We are. See ya.
That's not where I thought I was going with that. But you know, like I really like after, I hope this isn't too self-indulgent, but after like 12 years of doing this, I feel like I've done a pretty good job of sticking with that. I mean, it's nowhere near anything like a rock star thing or whatever, but it is about the same kind of a thing where you're doing something that you want people to notice and pay attention to. And I'm like, no, the most important thing to me is just the thrill of it, you know. It's still all about that, so that's cool. Like, aww. I think what's her name, Ruby, kind of lost that, you know.
She lost the thrill. She lost the passion. She has no enthusiasm about it. And she, I mean, I get it.
She is working at basically Home Depot. I'd be depressed.
Yeah. Oh hell yeah. But and I also get it that song is a curse. I totally. It felt really relatable, you know, that she was like, no, we're not playing fucking State. We are more than just Staplehead. But the thing is you're not, babe. You're not more than Staplehead because what else you got, hun? Oh, yeah,
really
you got nothing.
What makes that such a tragic, disturbing situation for her is that it's very common for rock bands where everybody just wants to hear the hits and they're like, come on, I'm doing new stuff. But this is even more than that because she didn't even write that hit. So she feels like she's coasting off of someone else's fumes and she can't replicate it. And that's all that people want to hear. So it's like a double whammy. Not only do they just want to hear her old stuff, but they want to hear something that didn't even come from her.
Yeah.
Right. And they keep having to play it. And it's like, they're having to punish themselves over and over and over again, listening to the song that they're playing and knowing that the money is just going to go to someone else.
I know. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's brutal. Like these days, I was thinking about it a little bit, like in the past, rock stars would make so much out of music sales. And that's where the royalties would go to someone else. But now I think they have to do more from touring because streaming money is shit, unless you're like Taylor Swift. So I feel like if they were able to, even if they kept Gavin alive and he got all the royalties, they would still get so much fame that they could go on tour and make some good money.
I mean, that's true. Like Staplehead is what's keeping them, as Eski says, like going and playing all these Irish pubs. If I think about it, I'm actually going to start to cry because he's like, it's so pathetic. And I love me an Irish pub with a live band of, you know, over the hill musicians. Who doesn't love that on a Saturday afternoon for brunch? Like, hell yes, take me to an Irish pub.
Yeah.
I'm
and
so
if they said,
there.
Hey, New York, are you rocking? I think, Jade, you'd be like, yeah, right?
I am the one who's like, fuck yeah, we are at like 3 p.m. with my mimosa. I'm always ready to rock. You know it. Yeah. I thought it was really funny when they were talking about the drummer who does get the royalties too. And now that bitch sells leggings in the fucking suburbs.
I know. Like, I know.
Belinda, her name is Belinda.
Because there's all these like leggings, what do you call it when pyramid
MLM.
Schemes? Yeah.
Yeah.
Multi-level marketing scheme. Yeah.
Ugh. Basic.
And they're
bitch
shitty
Belinda.
Leggings too.
Really?
Yeah, they're
oh
awful.
My god! At least be good.
Yeah,
I know.
Oh yeah, there was. I saw some like documentary series or something where they showed that like. The leggings aren't in good condition. Like people receive boxes and they're all like mildew.
Oh,
oh
like,
shit.
Yeah. And they're like all one size. And even though they ordered a variety of sizes and like, they're not good leggings on top of being an MLM. It's
yeah.
Just,
they're not
it's
good.
A bad deal.
So I have one more thing to say that I to add to that point, the most icky thing of all that Ruby did was faking like sadness and grief by performing like a tribute show for Gap with the flowers and like rest in metal. That was like
rest in metal.
Oh, step too far. Icky. Yeah. When Charlie comes in, she's like, fuck you with this fake tribute show. You know, like you didn't like Gavin. You didn't care about him at all. Yeah. That was
okay.
Not good.
My next point is the indignity of being a has-been hack, which is a lot about what we talked about the song Staplehead that didn't even come from her. But I just love that vibe permeated this episode where they go on the road, but they're touring small bars and small venues. They can't even find someone to man the merch table at first. They ask this guy who's working at a food truck and he's like, no, I like, you know, what I'm doing here. And they get the drummer from Craigslist. And I like the repetitiveness and kind of demoralizing aspects of the tour where she's like, let's see if Cleveland rocks, and no one says a word. Yeah. And then there's Al coaching the roadie about place the tape not here or here but here because of my sciatica. And then she's like, Battle Creek, show us your metal, and nobody says a word. And it's like the same, like I like that repetitiveness of the shows which don't get a good response, and then like the drudgery of everything, the minutiae of the touring, and that the song is a curse. And then it's really interesting that she sees this song as a curse, and anytime people see her, they're like, yeah, Staplehead. And she's like, fuck you. But then when Gavin steals her Staplehead scream, she fucking punches him in the face because that's all she has left.
She's like, that's all I have.
Yeah, don't take my one thing. And then in the tour van, Ruby's like, all we need to do is write one song that doesn't suck. And then Esky is just looking down in despair, like won't even make eye contact. And and yeah, like I said, I mean, even though they all like conspired to murder this kid, which is pretty bad, with all that indignity and just being in a one down position and desperation, it did make me feel good when they got some adulation with that Benson song finally, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to see them win in the end, but I liked that they at least got a little taste of it.
And I liked Al and Esky, and I wanted them to.
Yeah.
I mean, although they were completely complicit in this murder, yeah, I liked them. I don't know. I liked these.
No, I think they deserved to get in trouble, but they were likable still. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Poor Esky, especially when he was like, if I think about it, I'm going to start to cry.
But he like was right on there with the caviar at the end. Like,
yeah.
You know, yeah, this is good.
Oh, we should put this in the writer.
Yeah.
Okay, Penny. Got any more?
So Charlie always confronts people. It's brave, right? Like, she goes up to people that she thinks might be murderers, and she like confronts them with their bullshit. I really enjoyed, she confronts Ruby about Al's lyrics after she hears him talking about not being able to unmurder someone. And Ruby's like, oh, but he was on the stage and he would never like endanger himself or me or Esky. And you know, Charlie's like, yeah, I guess you're right. And then Ruby goes in and goes to the RV where Esky and Al are hanging out and confronts them about like their stupid bullshit, like the amp being on eBay. She like kicks it over. And then she's like, she calls them Clarence Dumbass and Veggie McShithead. And she tells Al, you can't sell the amp on eBay. It's evidence. And then she turns to Esky and she's like, right? And he's like, I don't know. I haven't taken criminal law yet.
Is it Al or Esky? Al just puts everything on eBay and he's like, not community property.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Does it on the sly.
She rips the notepad away from Al and says, don't write. What does she say? She says, do not confess to murder in a song. And then Esky says, it's probably okay unless you sing under oath. And I just want listeners to know that's not true. If you confess to murder in a song, it will be admissible in court as hearsay. Sometimes hearsay is admissible if it's a declaration against your own interest, like a confession.
Glad to
know. Don't confess to murder in writing, especially in your own handwriting. Like, that's definitely Al. You wrote that. Like,
but I did like really when stupid. Ruby was like, so should oh fuck, who wrote I Shot the Sheriff?
Oh yes, yeah, so you're gonna arrest Bob Marley.
Bob Marley was said I shot the sheriff. Should he be arrested for that? I like that.
And then she confronts Ruby again, and Charlie does, and she says, I may not get to see you in an orange prison jumpsuit, but you'll be in the orange build box apron for the rest of your life. That's hitting him where it hurts, which she learned from Sterling Frost Jr. Gavin was the real deal. He was metal. You all, you're the opposite of metal. You're talc. You're fucking talc. Talc was really funny.
Oh, yeah.
To me.
That was really funny.
Like a powdery soft substance that like might be carcinogenic. Yeah, love it.
All right, Jade.
Yeah, so I got a couple of things about Charlie. I really enjoyed her crowd surfing to escape Cliff. Like Deuteronomy holds him back.
That's
but
pretty metal.
But she has the idea to, I know what I'll do. I'll crowd surf to get away from him. And then now she's crowd surfing. She has to like take a minute to go, fuck you, Ruby. And then she says to the people, to the left, like, take me over there. And of course it works for her because it's just like the epitome of who Charlie is as a person, is the kind of person you can just crowd surf her way out of it, you know? Because when you think about it,
I
want
to be able to crowd surf my way out of any situation. That would be awesome.
Right? But seriously, take it as like a metaphor. I was kind of high done when I watched this episode, and I... If you can't see him, well, he's doing a Superman kind of a here I go flying gesture. Yeah, but the metaphor of crowd surfing is it speaks to Charlie because you have to, it's like you, other people have to like you enough to lift you up and do this for you. You know, you're not just gonna, you know how it goes on. We've seen it on so many shows.
Imagine if Jed had tried this, he'd have been on the floor.
Right. No one's going to pick that guy up. Yeah. I feel like I've seen it in cartoons as a kid where the villain, where like the good guy gets, you know, all the good guys are getting carried through the crowd. And then the villain goes, I'm going to do it too. And they jump and then the crowd just parts like the Red Sea. And then they smack.
Funk.
Yeah. It's just like the classic, you know. So I just love that Charlie had that idea and then flips off Ruby. I was cracking up during that part. And yeah, my question about what you just said, Penny, she knows that she can't go to the cops to tell them about Ruby. So she obviously tells Murder Girl, which was such a great seed planted in the beginning. I was overjoyed to see that a podcaster saved the day. Go Murder Girl. Go Murder Girl. I loved it. And she was, oh, Murder Girl, is that your band? What are you, a death metal? No, I'm a podcaster. I solve mysteries. I was like, yes.
And she's like, nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, nice.
She's the ultimate comeuppance, right? I mean, they get in trouble because they don't get in trouble, but they're not allowed to have the success they wanted with this song because
that's right,
it would be a fraud. But it's really that it's the next season of the Murder Girl podcast is all about them that does them
well
in.
The guy at the businessman, the music man who says, no, I'm not going to give you the money. He then goes, and that's, you got bigger problems. And so it's like Murder Girl is the one who's sending him to jail. She's going to lock up the bad guys, you know? So I was
so
excited.
But
we
don't know if they do get locked up. It's just.
No, yeah,
like,
we don't know.
It's probably
this is
not
one
good,
of those.
But yeah.
This is the one episode where at the end, the bad guys don't get, you know, put in handcuffs, but it's almost worse because as she says, it's like a living hell. It's like a punishment, this life, because I'm not successful.
Or is it like so metal that everybody wants to go and see their show now? Because they're on the Murder Girl podcast.
I hope that that's not how. I hope that
knowing our society, you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, people would actually want to go see them, but hopefully they'll get arrested and then they can have a band in prison. Although not together because gender separated.
Right. Well, that was a fun thought experiment. Anyway, okay, so this is how I got onto that. She says she knows she can't go to the cops to tell them about Ruby, so she tells Murder Girl. But how do I had no idea how the YouTube, how does that tie into it? It has nothing to do with Charlie, am I right?
Yeah,
she didn't tell them.
That's a coincidence that the YouTubers figured out that it was infringement.
I don't know. I felt like possibly Charlie could have contacted her because she seemed pretty happy to hear about it. But they didn't
there's
show
nothing
it,
in so. The episode of Charlie figuring out Benson theme, and there's nothing to show that Charlie even knew he watched Benson because she didn't stay on the tour bus with them.
That's a good point. Yeah,
I don't know. We'll never know, I guess. But that was a question I had. And then I loved how she kind of learns like these life lessons from Gavin this episode. And at the end, it shows her driving away in her car, and she just goes, "But it a whoosh." And I was like, Charlie, taking little, you know, nuggets of gold and picking them up along her travels. I just love it. I feel like this journey is so healthy for Charlie as a person. And like, I'm so excited to see her flourish because she's growing as a person, you know? I love that she's going to learn from everyone she meets. It just warms my heart. Oh, and one more thing. Sorry, go ahead. Well,
let me just on that point, it's something, this is a throwback as we've talked about to other series and of the past. And at least in my memory, a lot of those series, the main characters definitely had repetitive behaviors, catchphrases, you know, ways of being, but they didn't often pick up something from an episode, unless it was the pilot, but other episodes, and then carry that forward. Like, it always felt like they started from scratch at the beginning of each episode. But what's different with Poker Face is she uses this glue thing, you know, like she there's some memory of what's happened in between, yeah. which I like. I always like that. That's one of the things I loved about yeah. Seinfeld, one of my favorite series ever, is things that happened in one episode had an impact on later episodes, even though it was a silly sitcom.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited to see what little nuggets she takes from yeah. I mean, George and Gavin to the next episode.
Yeah, I hope the wood tasting shows up again.
Yeah, that's you never nice know. But I watched, I mean, I hope this isn't too much of a spoiler, but, you know, they had a little, like, later on in the season after this, because they had dropped four episodes at once, so they showed. And I think you heard her humming Sucker Punch, which is just
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, love, that's right. Yeah. So... one thing I thought of while you were talking, I realized, yeah, it's just another thing about Charlie that the reason that she was able to solve this murder is the fact that she pays attention to things like garbage. Most people would have just picked all that stuff up and thrown it away so quickly without, but she's like that aware of her surroundings and pays attention to details that much that she reads, hey, wait a minute.
It's like
minute.
A savant, practically.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, this is something you can't teach. It's, she is a detective. Through and through. She was born a detective. She will die a detective. She is Harriet the Spy, whether she likes it or not. You know, and it's fucking awesome.
Who,
and I feel like, because you know what, guys? I feel
in
like
our
that's...
last episode?
Who said what?
That they remind it that it's reminding them of Sherlock, right? Because he's like
that was
hyper...
one of the listeners, yeah.
Yeah, one of the listeners
oh,
said that.
Oh, yes. I can't remember who.
Maureen or Kara.
Yeah. I think it was Kara. Kara. It was Kara. Yeah, she's
other...
a Sherlock Holmesian type of person.
Yeah, she's a Sherlock.
Yeah, and I just, I want to be Charlie.
You want to solve
mysteries?
Like
I've been a, I feel like
let's
I've just been
van,
such a little
okay?
Nancy Drew
gonna,
my whole life.
Let's get a van and go around and what if we can't find any murders? One of us will have to kill someone.
Oh no,
and then
what
the
if there's no murders?
Can solve it. Yeah, that's going to suck.
I love so Jason's boring. Idea just got really, and then you were like, wait.
It doesn't work out.
Oh, well, we need a murder. Well, hopefully there will be one. Let's
Let me
go.
Think about it. I'll get back to you.
I mean, murders are happening all the time.
Yeah.
So we just have
Where
to
do we
find
go?
One,
Baltimore?
Not create
I don't
one.
Know.
Yeah. Florida, serial killer capital of the world.
Yep. Florida's pretty bleak. We can stay with my parents. Let's go there. Okay. Last thing I wanted to say about Charlie is, do you notice that on two episodes now, there's this thing where she can't see? She on for the lottery tickets, she needed the readers, and this episode she uses Deuteronomy's
magnifying glass.
Do you think that this is gonna, I don't know, it's something I'm keeping an eye on. I'm like, is she blind? Does she need glasses? What's going on here? I find it funny though, because the gift of a detective, like, what is a detective always seen with? You know, like they're a private eye, they're a magnifying glass. Yeah, so I wonder if
Sherlock
this will
Holmes.
become, yeah, I wonder. Yeah,
I mean, it seems to be things that are tiny, so I think her vision's probably fine for distance, but like,
well, she read the straw.
Reading glasses.
There was this little line printed on the straw. I mean, I'm sensing a plot hole. No, I'm kidding. It's a plot hole. Nothing I can do about it, guys. Nothing I can do. It's a plot hole. Don't come at me.
The actor who played Deuteronomy, by the way, I forgot his name, but he is like a Tony Award winning Broadway actor.
Yes.
And then they put him in this like small... like roadie part,
I
which
know.
Is pretty funny.
What is his name? Chuck Cooper. He was recently in Tick, Tick, Boom, the film. Mr. Chuck Cooper.
I gotta see that. People love
I know.
That.
I need to see it too.
That.
All right.
Anyway, that's
I feel like there's a lull. What? Where
yes,
are we
Jason,
next? What's next? My turn?
It is your
right?
point.
Okay. Now things are getting cooked. Just kidding.
No.
I don't actually. Do I have another point? You know, my standard point of things taking on more significance later. So they set up this whole Krampus Cam thing, the band Krampus,
yeah.
which is a great name for a metal band, that where this guy jumps out at people and they get it on camera. And then it jumps out from the porta potty at Charlie. She punches him in the face.
Oh, God.
He goes back in the porta potty. That was a good setup with a payoff. And then the Krampus video goes up and... Charlie finds out, when did that go up? 4 hours ago. Oh, 4 hours is the magic number for Cliff to
yes,
show up, of course.
And he's right there.
Charlie Kale. Cliff, I didn't take you for a TikToker.
It's just funny that it took him 4 hours to find her because she used her ATM card, and now 4 hours because the Krampus video was posted.
Yep.
Then there's a few of these, but we've already talked, so I'm not going to cover the ones we already talked about. Gavin has this camera under his drum kit so he can review his footwork, and of course that shows, then they're able to see that the bandmates were wearing rubber-soled shoes. That came back to have
more significance. Heavy-soled murder shoes.
and they made a point. Did you see they made a point at the very beginning of the first concert we see with Ruby? They zoomed right in on her studded heels.
Oh.
Yeah. So they showed us. Yeah, and I remember that shot, and I remember thinking, why are they paying such attention to feet in this episode? Because I'm like, enough with the feet. I can always tell because I don't.
Something's
I guess, love
up with
to
that.
Look at feet. Yeah. So when I see
you're
it, I'm
not
like,
a foot person. Oh, I am.
No,
I'm just kidding.
I'm not. Just not like I hate. I'm not weird about it, but I noticed it with Gavin's bare feet at the beginning, and then her shoes, and I'm like, I wonder what this feet thing is all about. And then by the end, I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point though, because when Gavin said about, you know, if you wear shoes, you're not grounded.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a metaphor for where Ruby has gone wrong. She's in this whole thing I was talking about losing the joy of rock, right? And now she's got these thick rubber-soled shoes that just disconnect her from
disconnect her. Yes, Jason. Yeah.
But they do technically ground her.
That is true. Yeah. Ironically enough.
I love it. So yes, but no.
But no.
That was a very astute observation, Jason.
Well,
let's see. So Gavin, now this is one that I thought was going to come back, and maybe it still will. I kind of don't think so, though. Gavin takes this Polaroid, and she's like, no. And I'm like, rip that fucker up. But no, tosses it out the window. Then it's laying there on the road. But I don't think they're going to come back to it because Cliff found him through the video, the YouTube video.
Mm-hmm. He said, I can't remember what Gavin said after she said, thanks for that healthy dose of freaking me out about my life. What did she say? When he says, are you going to be like this forever? And she says, I hadn't really thought about it until now, but thank you for that healthy dose of like freaking me out. I forget.
Existential crisis.
Something
maybe?
Along those lines. Yeah. And then, so it's like a somber moment. And then flipped like beat later, Gavin just goes, bah! And like takes a photo with her. And she goes, no pictures, please. And then she throws it out and she goes, and that was littering. And he's like, oh,
but
yeah, sorry.
Do that. Okay. All right. Shall we get into notes? Or are we ready for notes?
Oh, I was going to say one more thing about the picture. The picture does come into play because that's how she sees the tape on the mic.
Yeah, it's a different picture, though. It's not the one he threw out the window.
No, but just the fact that he takes these pictures, yeah.
The Polaroids, yeah.
But still, I was like, what about that one that's out on the road? But yeah.
Oh, yeah, we all wondered.
All right. Notes. Let's take turns again. Penny?
I really enjoyed John Hodgman showing up as
PC
the
guy.
Middle-aged white guy who wants drugs and everyone thinks is a narc. I love it when he's like,
do you know my friend
when
Molly?
He's talking to Charlie. Yeah, do you know Molly?
Oh, yes.
I'm looking for Molly. and he's like, I'm not a narc. And she's like, you're wearing pleated khakis. Just try harder. I believe in you. Just walks off. And then later when he reconfirms that he's not a narc after she tries to like give him the evidence because she thinks he's a federal agent, he says, I think I'm just really bad at buying drugs.
She's like, you are. Really bad at it.
Yeah, you are.
That's PC guy.
Yeah.
Jade?
Yeah, I thought it was cool that Charlie, she noticed the when Ruby said we got lucky, she noticed that was a lie. But she couldn't, I just like that her just like last episode with the paprika, just because she knows something's a lie doesn't necessarily mean she has a superpower. She knows it's a lie, but it doesn't really do her any good. It bothers her. It's like she's like Columbo. She's like Columbo says it all the time. It bothers me. That bothered me.
Yeah.
Peter Falk always says that. It's one of his like kind of catchphrases. He kind
it's
of
exactly
has another
the same. Because he knows something's wrong, but he doesn't know.
Yeah,
why.
And she's so Columbo. It's funny. I forgot to say, just like her bullshit catchphrase, Columbo's catchphrase is just one more thing. He's always known for that because that's always the thing that the villain is like. Don't
oh no,
that.
I thought I'd got away with it.
Yeah, like he's have a nice day, ma'am. And then actually, just one more thing.
Get See, him. I knew that. And yet, I don't think I've ever seen an episode. Maybe I have seen one. Anyway. Okay, my turn. So Charlie had, speaking of lies, trouble telling which thing Ruby said was a lie at one point. It was like she's talking to this roadie and finds out this is the roadie that was supposed to check the amp, but he got fired and didn't quit. And she says, well, I knew Ruby threw a lie in there. I just couldn't track the, so there were a lot of things Ruby was saying. I didn't write them down, but it seems like maybe with Charlie, if you say a barrage of things and one of them is a lie, that maybe she won't be able to tell which one for sure.
Right. I knew there was a lie in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Penny?
I have a question. So
what is your
the
question?
Opening song of the episode was Christopher Cross, you know, If You Get Caught Between the Moon and New York City.
It's a theme from Arthur.
Yeah. And later Ruby's like, they're talking about like needing a bridge in the song. And she's like, oh, I'm not Christopher Cross. I didn't understand.
Oh my God, she
the
did
reference,
say that,
like,
didn't she?
Why the song? Okay. Like, what is that song? I didn't get it. I was hoping you guys understood.
I don't
what
know
that
how
was
you
about.
Keep doing this, Penny, but like, that's my very next point. Do you want me to?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if this is really an answer. This is what I took from it, though, and it's something that I really liked about it, is that opening theme. I thought it really emphasized and got across to us with no words, which I love when shows can do something, communicate something so strong and sure just visually. And so with this song, zooming in on Ruby's face, taking these deep sighs of just regret of where her life is at the store where she's working, scanning the things at Home Depot, and this song is playing in the background, which is completely opposed to everything that she is as a metal, wants to be a metal god. It's like, what is completely opposite of that? Christopher Cross, theme from Arthur. That's like as I guess not commercial, but it's like, it's basically elevator music at this point, you know? And
yeah. And it's about this kind of Nebuchadnezzar guy. And
yeah, and I thought and of roll. The meaning of the lyrics, when you're caught between the moon and New York City, I feel like she kind of is, because that's a pretty huge distance, you know? But mm-hmm. the fact that New York City is the home base point speaks something, because Ruby wants fame, and where do you go to get your fame, you know, either LA or New York City? So I took it like that. That just spoke to her desolate depression. Mm-hmm. You know, floating in no success in her life.
My next one, Gavin dies mid Staplehead scream. And it wasn't until second viewing that I realized that he needed to do that scream to kill it. That's why she gave him the scream, because I think he has to use an effect on the amp to set it off, right? At
yeah.
the same time. And that's what kills him, which was quite an effect, like, rah! And then yep. later when you see her watching it, Charlie watching it, and she's all getting into the music, and then you just see the flash of light, and her expression changes, was pretty affecting. But Gavin thinks Ruby let him do the scream because Charlie had talked to her, and we saw Charlie tell Ruby, come on, go easy on him, he's a good guy, after she hit him. But I don't think so. I think that was just a misconception,
right?
I mean, I thought, oh, is this another case where Charlie caused the murder? But I think Ruby killing him didn't have anything to do with Charlie, and Gavin just read that wrong, right?
That's a good point. Yeah. No, it's a really good point.
Gavin wants to believe the best about people, right? So he thinks Ruby came around on him, and that it's because Charlie, you know, talked to her. He's so innocent in some ways.
Yeah, but you also... you would never expect that she would try to kill him either. Unless you were on a TV show.
Yep. No, that was because I enjoyed that seed being planted, that they were very sure to put in the lines. Why do you have an amp? You don't need an amp. What for? So if you hadn't had an unnecessary amp.
Yeah. To get that sound.
Yeah, to get that. When he did that noise too, he was like, I was like, oh God, stop, sir.
And
you were gross.
The fact that she hired him anyway, at that point when I was already hating him because of the freaking yogurt, that just was like, get rid of this guy.
Yeah. I blow my backing vocals through my fuzz pedal and it's like, and I was like, stop, Gavin, stop it. You need to see yourself out right now, sir. None of that.
Do you have any more notes, Penny?
No, I'm good.
Jade?
Yeah, I got one more. Right before Gavin dies, I love the cinematography in this episode. It was so great. All the close-ups of the band's faces, and then their... we first had their feet, right? So we could see all of them were wearing the platforms. But then there was no music. The music cut out, and there was just this heavy drum beat. And cut to close-ups in this blue light of, like, Ruby and Al and Esky. Just their faces, and the lights go out, and then comes up, he's dead, red light on Ruby and on the rest of the guys, and dead Gavin was in like a white light, and it was like just done in silence, you know, except for his scream.
Yeah.
And yeah, he died mid scream. And it was just so very palpable, metal. The way very metal. But I was like in that room. I love what they're doing. I feel like every time I watch this show, like Alice through the Looking Glass. I'm in that world. I can feel it. Mm-hmm. I can smell the bar, like, you know, and I love it. I love that when shows can do that to me. I forget I'm watching a show. It's great.
Pretty cool. Okay, my last note is just to entice you to keep viewing. I mean, I think at this point anybody would, but things I'm excited about coming up is the guest stars coming up, like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, favorite of mine, Ellen Barkin, Tim Blake Nelson, Jamila Jamil, Nick Nolte, Tim Meadows,
Nick Nolte,
Rhea Perlman, who's Carla on Cheers. Whole bunch more, tons and tons. And that's also another throwback episode of aspect of this show. If you watch shows like Love Boat or any of these detective shows, and like you said, Jade, if you go back to Columbo, you'll see people who later became famous.
Who won't you see
getting their starts?
Or people who had been famous and were sort of fading out. That was the other group. Kind of
what's happening here a little bit.
You
know, like Chloe Savini isn't at the peak of her stardom, but she's still great.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Hopefully this will help get her there.
Yeah,
because I want her to just get do everything, please. This woman, and she's so sexy too. Oh, anyway, but you didn't mention my two favorite, the ones that I'm most excited to see are Cherry Jones and Judith Light, my theater ladies.
I almost
didn't
mention Cherry Jones. Yeah,
I love Cherry Jones.
Oh
so.
God, there's just goddess and Judith Light. Oh, I'm so excited to see them. They're the ones I've been waiting for.
I also know that Natasha Lyonne directs the episode with Nick Nolte.
With
in
Nick
it.
Nolte, yeah.
Oh, that must have been fun directing Nick Nolte.
Yeah,
he was at Sundance. He was in his robe, totally drunk. In the morning.
Awesome.
That's at the awesome.
Hotel. Was he doing his sculptures? Because
no, he's just sitting there with his in his robe. Just
weird dude.
All right. It's time for some hilarious bullshit.
Say bullshit if it isn't true.
Bullshit.
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 Penny?
I've actually already said a lot of my favorite hilarious lines.
Me too.
Like clicky high school gatekeepy bullshit. That's one of them.
Oh, I got a couple.
Not to be all Felix Unger. There's a lot of name drops in these shows. Like they love the pop culture references, which is really fun for somebody like me who's watched so much TV.
I think Jade's gonna say my favorite line before I get a chance, but we'll see.
So go.
No, it's your turn.
I'm going to go in order. So my first one that I enjoyed was, I love when they add the word bullshit at the very beginning of the episode. And so Mike, the guy at Home Depot where Ruby works, he loves Staplehead, the song. And he said, I had this on CD back in the day. My daughter says I'm too old to rock, but I say bullshit. I work with Ruby Ruins.
Yeah. And Ruby's God damn it.
That delighted me. That put a smile on my face when I hear bullshit.
I'm just really happy you didn't say my line, because it's when Al is giving his song about alimony and Ruby says,
oh, yeah.
Ah, stop. That's awful. God. And Esky goes, how's the divorce going, bro? Not good. The lyrics are temporary. I just slug out whatever's in my head. We can zhuzh it up later. Ruby says, there's no zhuzhing. It's a turd. I don't want to zhuzh the turd.
Zhuzh turd.
Yeah, zhuzh the turd.
I don't want to zhuzh the turd.
That's a good piece of advice for everyone.
Yeah. Nobody likes a zhuzhed turd.
No, not really.
You can dress it up all you want. A turd's still a turd.
Yeah,
I see you.
There's
this
street artist named Slinkachu.
Can't put lipstick on a turd.
He actually does zhuzh up turds and take pictures of it. He finds dog poop and puts like glitter and stuff on it and takes photos.
What?
Oh, well, maybe you can't zhuzh a turd. What do we know?
Are you telling me the truth right now?
Yeah, true. He also decorates snails and then re-releases them into the world. He's amazing. He is amazing. His main
kind of
work
snail
is
abuse.
These are these miniatures. He does these like tiny figures.
They end up having more fun afterwards.
Yeah. He creates these like vignettes with these mini figures and leaves them out in the world for people to find. He's amazing. Look him up. Slinkachu. It's amazing.
Next time I see a painted snail, I'm going to know where he was. Where that snail been?
I'm pretty sure he's based in Europe, so you might have to travel.
Nice. I think this is caught on among the snails, so you never know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're painting themselves now.
Self-decorating snails.
It's the latest thing. Penny, you got any more?
I want to say again, you think I can afford law school? This is an online MSL degree. I can't even afford to sell out.
That really got the lawyer over here.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm like, I feel like it's a lawyer thing.
It's good to have a lawyer.
Once you take
and
on
a,
that debt.
A lawyer and an actor on a podcast. It's great.
Yeah, it's useful.
I know. Look at
a
us.
A lot of bases. We need, what else do we need? A construction worker? I don't know. An Indian.
Right, a Native American.
Yeah.
Construction worker.
Be
cop.
Be problematic.
We need a cop.
What's the fourth one?
Is anybody a Native American or a cop that wants to come on?
Yeah, and you must.
Kara's
been...
used to be a prosecuting attorney. She'll be on next time.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to her about it.
Oh,
yeah.
Two attorneys. I'll be almost. Oh no, we'll you'll be there, Jason. So
we'll be outdone. Yeah, I took the LSAT, but I never. Anyway, go ahead, Jade.
Oh man. Okay, next line that I loved: Gavin drumming on the table at the restaurant. Gavin, Jesus, I admire the commitment to the craft, but maybe not with the metal sticks. I mean, Christ on a cracker. And I say Christ on a cracker all the time, and I loved that.
I loved when this roadie that got fired said, this business is built on relationships and amphetamines.
Yeah. I laughed out loud on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, you didn't quit? And he's like, I got fired over some bullshit.
Yeah.
I don't think we ever found out what it was.
Ruby says to him, like, you're just not, we're all about moving on and you're not with our vibe.
Oh, well,
it was bullshit.
Because
she just didn't want him to check the amp.
She said, exactly. We're trying to spread our wings or something, you know?
And you're,
like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And you're not on board or something like that. I know, I was going to write it down, but then I forgot. But I was like, don't do Deuteronomy like that. I felt so bad because he was letting them spread their wings.
Deuteronomy. All right.
He moved up. He got a better job.
Jade?
Did we already say, have you seen my friend Molly?
Yeah.
That was so good. I thought we did. Maybe you know my
friend Lucy in the sky with fuck off. I'm just looking for some cocaine.
He says some old-fashioned cocaine.
Why are you asking for Lucy and in the Sky with Diamonds if you're looking for cocaine?
I think
he's willing to take any drug.
He thinks, yeah.
Like, whatever you got. I'll
Maybe
take
I'm just really
have.
Bad at asking. It's like, yep, you don't even know what you're asking for, sir, because Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, it ain't going to get you coke. Yeah, and the part where she said, hey, Narc, and he goes, my name is Scott. That, for some reason, the way he said it. And that is, I wanted to call him out, by the way. He is a very famous, John Hodgman is a famous podcaster, not podcaster. He has podcasts with his audio dramas. He's a voiceover. And so me being a voiceover, I look up to that man.
He also used to be on The Daily Show. And
yeah.
That's true.
He was absolutely hilarious on The Daily Show. Yeah.
I think I have one more. Oh, it's with him again. Do you think it's enough to take to your boss? Why would you want to take it to the VP finance nationwide? So you're not a cop? No, I'm an actuary. You thought I was a cop? Yes, man, I thought you were a narc. And then everyone's been calling me that. I'm just really bad at asking for drugs. Yes, you're really bad at it. But just the way he said, I'm an actuary. I don't know. This guy cracked me up. Everything he said was funny.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the news.
Nora Zuckerman and Lila Zuckerman, they're the showrunners and they're sisters. I have a video that I want to link where they talk about the format of the show. They talk about the Hal Ketchum aspect of it. And then they were the ones that kind of made me realize that I was rooting for the villain a little bit with Ruby. Like I didn't hate her and as much as I probably should have. And they mentioned that in this video. So I'll link that interview. They have a couple of interviews up online right now. And I will also link the playlist that I'm creating and adding to all the time about it's just a Poker Face interviews, all the good interviews that I found.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a podcast on there too. And one other podcast I want to call out and I will link. It's another interview. Yeah, I have the one on the list already. It's a interview on 1A podcast hosted by Jen White. Or this one, I think the host was David Gura, and he's an excellent host. And then this other interview is on The Parting Shot, hosted by H. Allen White podcast. So I'll link that as well. But yeah, I sent you guys the link for that playlist. So if you want to add to it, please do. All the good Poker Face interviews.
Anyone can add to it?
Well, anyone I invite. If you create a playlist, you can invite people to add to it.
Oh, you're in talking to me and Penny, not the listeners.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you guys.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. Us guys.
Yeah. But I will obviously put the link in the description.
Right.
So
but if you're hearing me, you can't. You can listen.
But you can't add. Not
unless
you.
Unless you ask us.
Because I don't know you. Nicely. Unless you send me your email address and I will add.
Who knows what you might
add?
You might add some weird, like nothing to do with Poker Face.
Well, then I'll take it off. And then I'll pick you off the list. Yeah. Yes?
All right, let's get into listener feedback. Penny?
Maureen Favo writes in again and says, loved this ep. Earworm! Chemistry between actors was amazing. Couple questions. When did you know the song was the Benson theme? Still kicking myself for missing that one.
Wait,
Jason,
let's answer
knew right away.
Yeah, what did you? What about you guys?
I had to be told at the end because I didn't even notice it was Benson that he was watching until my second watch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, honestly, you want me to tell you the truth, and I was going to not say this the whole podcast, but I don't even hear it, you guys. Like, is there something with me? When they were demonstrating it and they were clicking back and forth on the guys
You're
on
like,
YouTube.
That's not the same.
I was like, is it the same? It's a real good disguise if it is. I still can't really hear it. I don't know. It's not that obvious to me.
Okay, now we know.
So I did not.
I
was
completely. Instantly.
I was shocked, my friend.
First three notes. Okay, Penny, go on.
I don't really understand this one, so maybe. Oh, she means Cliff. Do you think we will have an episode this season where Charlie and Curtis have to cooperate to get out of a bind? All
is that is his name Cliff Curtis
shows.
Or something?
It's or, no, it's like Cliff LeBrand.
Maybe she means
or something
Cliff.
Like
yeah.
that. I think she means Cliff.
Yeah.
Where Charlie and let's say. Where Charlie and Cliff have to cooperate to get out of a bind. All those 70s and 80s mysteries have an episode where rivals have to work together for a bit and admit they hate but respect each other.
Could be. I could see it going either way.
I think it'd be fun because I'm always here for more Benjamin Bratt, but I don't think it's... I'm not seeing it as the direction that we're going. I don't know. Just my spidey senses tell me.
I could see him doing it just to get more Benjamin Bratt into an episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, he seems like a pretty clear, like, no bullshit enforcer type. You know, he's not going to be getting in trouble with his boss or anything. So,
this is a question I actually forgot that I had wanted to ask you guys. What do you think of the whole? Because I'm shocked to listen to other podcasters who cover this show and other people who review it online. The first thing everybody talks about is, so what do you think of how they're weaving in this threat kind of thread, right? It's so funny that as a species have evolved to watching television, we leap right to the, what connects it to the last episode though? Where's that aspect? And that's what everyone is paying attention to. Yeah. It's so funny. And that's the thing that I'm the least interested in. I'm here for the fact that it's different every week and that old school Columbo, murder of the week format.
We haven't even talked about that hardly at all. I like the overarching story, but.
No, because
it's a light touch.
Because that's the biggest criticism I hear about this show is people don't enjoy the way that the bad guy is following her. They don't buy it, or they think that he's showing up too much, or that the threat is either too much or it's not present enough. He should be, woven into it more.
I think sometimes people look for something to say, to complain about, because they think it makes them seem smarter.
Yeah, true.
So they just like. They like pull on some like teeny tiny nit and try to turn it into something bigger than it is.
Yeah.
I think that's
dumb. I know. And I think that it's one of the show's strengths, the fact that they don't weave Cliff in more and we're not constantly cutting to see where the bad guy is. I don't want to. It's going to break up my enjoyment of what Rian Johnson said in episode 3. When we covered episode 3, I read this in the news section where he says I want to be like Quantum Leap. I want to immerse you in this little mini ecosystem. And if we're constantly cutting to the bad guy, that disturbs that, you know?
Absolutely. I like that. It's a little like, you know, we've talked about how this show is like a story of the week. So it lends itself even more to that. But the predominant form of storytelling, at least in the circles that we travel in lately that everyone likes, is where there's an overarching story. It's like one long story, like Breaking Bad, or right now everybody's watching Last of Us. And this most recent episode, number 3, was a complete departure from anything anyone was thinking about in the show, right, Penny? And some people were like, what the fuck, man? Why are we having this detour from the zombies here? But most of us were able to just be like, no, man, don't worry about the plot. Just appreciate, like, it's all storytelling. Like, appreciate the moment and the story.
In the moment.
And be moved. And
yeah.
Like, that's what I care about.
And like, let the creators, like the artists, tell the story the way they want to tell the story.
Yeah.
Like, they did that.
It's
for
an experience.
Reason.
It's not like learning what happened. Like, that's just part of it. I'm interested to know what's going to happen, but I'm more interested in what funny things people are going to say, or what cool, surprising situations are they going to get into, and stuff like that. You know?
Yeah.
What beautiful cinematography are we going to see? And
all this kind of thing. It's just taking it in moment by moment and being ready to go. I
being
just want to go wherever.
On the journey.
Yeah, on the journey. On the next phase of my journey, I'm going vegan.
For me, it's all about being moved, whether it's laughing or crying or being scared. If I can be led through a series of emotions like that, I don't care about the overarching plot. I just want to feel something for once.
Yeah. I like
as long as the plot, it makes even a little bit of sense, then I'm all there for everything else.
I mean, I don't want it to not make sense, but I'm just like...
It needs structure, but like...
Like some people just would be happy. It feels like just forget watching the show. Let's read the Wikipedia entry, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I don't think that it needs more of the bad guy in order to give us a reason to care.
It'll come.
At the end of the day. Yeah, I think it will
come too. More stories about that with, we know Ron Perlman's going to be in the show.
Yeah. True. So excited.
So excited.
Yeah. All right. I'm next on back to listener feedback, folks. After that detour, man, we are here we go. Home stretch, y'all. Barry Evitz. I enjoyed this episode. Chloe Sevigny was fantastic, as always. My husband and I have been singing Merch Girl to each other all week. Yes.
That's
Merch
awesome.
Girl.
Barry
Merch
is a girl. Long time. Podcastica listener, as is Maureen, and as is Kara. Carolyn says, I really like this episode, and I still have Staplehead stuck in my head. That song is catchy AF. I love the appearance by John Darnielle, lead singer of the Mountain Goats. I wasn't 100% positive it was him until he started singing. Then there was zero doubt. Ooh, Mountain Goats fan. Made me want to take a break and listen to No Children.
Yeah. Mountain Goats is great.
Really? I don't even know them, I don't think. This episode made me appreciate Charlie's investigative skills even more. It's clear that she's incredibly intelligent and observant, in addition to having her gift of being able to tell when people are lying. She's like Sherlock Holmes, but with a fairly grungy 1970s vibe, and I love it. Also, I died at the realization that Gavin basically stole the theme music from Benson for Sucker Punch as they were preparing to sign their contracts. I legitimately did not see that coming. And he didn't do it on purpose, I don't think.
No.
Just came to him. Favorite quotes. Yeah. Now that bitch is selling leggings in the suburbs.
Yes.
I don't want to be all Felix Unger or anything, but this is my house, you know. I'm not an arc. And you're wearing pleated khakis, you know, just try harder. I believe in you. And the entirety of Al's brilliant song, You Can't Unmurder Someone.
Yes.
So true.
Well said, Kara.
It is true. Can't, as far as I know. Okay, and last we have our live Steve from Steve Brown.
Live
Steve. All right, here we go. Episode 4, Poker Face. This is Steve. Oh, hey, Murder Magnet. This guy is so fanboying out, meeting Ruby Ruin. It's great. You're the drummer. I don't want to shush turd. This guy watching Benson. It's great. Drummer Belinda wrote the song. She gets all the royalties. Why I didn't realize the first time I watched this, I should have known that Charlie was the merch girl, but just because the storytelling technique they're using, which I really love, just pegged him with that stapler, and he is bleeding. Chloe Sevigny, you have changed that guy out. One hit. Don't take my scream again. Is Cam really a thing? About the first time I watched this, I didn't think about it the first time I watched this. Where's the drummer sleeping? Didn't even realize, again, the second time watching it, I'm seeing so many things that I didn't notice. The whole thing with the amp and seeing them switching out the amps. Yeah. I noticed the first time through, though, that they're all wearing the thick-soled boots and he's got bare feet. Oh, and they all three signed, written by their names, and then they burn up the one that had Gavin's name on it. He was trying to get blood on his amp. Love the subtle references. Felix Unger, the Odd Couple. I guess they didn't have her say BS when Ruby said we just got lucky, because then we would know how she was figuring things out. It's really good. That's how I know you didn't write it. She just cold-cocked Krampus. He just said unmurder someone, and she just realized that that Gavin's amp is here in the van. That means the police or the fire, whoever had that, took the other amp. Rest in metal right there on the drum. Mic drop. Now, Charlie just said the title of the episode also. Another mic drop. Your talc. Oh, Merch Girls, Punch of Krampus went viral. And she got away. Love it. She took all the stuff to Murder Girl. All right. Can't wait for the next one. Talk to you soon.
Oh, my God. Steve.
A barrage of, like, I don't know, just remember this moment. And then you get a little hit of dopamine. Remember this moment? Dopamine.
Yeah. I was really... Okay. So I'm really glad, you guys, that we are not the only ones that just enjoys fucking saying our favorite lines from shows that we just saw to each other and then laughing like that was so funny. Why is that?
At least one more person.
It's so satisfying. I don't know. I'm always worried that people are going to hate that we add this hilarious bullshit section in, because that's what it is. It's hilarious bullshit. And we should label it like hilarious bullshit that we need to repeat.
Yeah.
Because it feels good
It's the joy of it. My first experience with that really was when we decided to cover Ash versus Evil Dead, which was this hilarious gore comedy with Bruce Campbell. And that was half of what we did on there. We just repeated the lines and laughed. And then we're like, thanks for listening, everybody. All right. Well, thank you so much for writing and calling in, everybody. It's so much fun. Everybody, I feel like, come on and join the fun.
Anyone who is still listening at this point, just like, thank you. I mean, just hi. Yeah. Hi, you. How you doing?
What are you still doing here? You must.
What are you still doing here? We're just about to, you know, end this podcast. But thank you. Thank you for listening and being
here.
Thanks,
everybody.
Truly.
If you want to write in or leave us a message, don't be shy. You can find all our contact information at podcastica.com, as well as all the other podcasts that Podcastica puts out.
Yeah, and there's some really secret treasure on there. There's stuff on there. You wouldn't fucking believe it. You're not going to fucking believe it.
Secret treasure, you say?
But the other thing is the Extraordinary Podcast, which Penny's just started off with Craig. And it's a really funny show where everybody in the world has superpowers, but it's kind of adult and humorous and funny as hell. And I've only seen an episode.
Yeah, it's raunchy.
But it's kind of raunchy.
I need to watch. All right, yes. And next time we will be covering episode 5 of Poker Face, Time of the Monkey.
Yeah, and I'm like really excited that we're done with these fucking 4 that dropped at once, where we had to marathon them. Because I'm exhausted.
Yeah. That was a lot.
So now next time we get to just do one in a night, and
it's gonna feel so loose and luxurious.
Yeah.
And it'll be like 4 hours, because that's what we're used to at this point. So 4 hours on one episode. Get
on
ready
one
for
episode.
It. Here it comes.
All right, can't wait. Well, that is all for this episode. Thanks for listening, everybody.
And Carolyn,
we know what you did, psycho.
This message comes from BetterHelp. Can you think of a time when you didn't feel like you could be yourself? Like you were hiding behind a mask? BetterHelp online therapy is convenient, flexible, and can help you learn to be your authentic self so you can stop hiding. Because masks should be for Halloween fun, not for your emotions. take off the mask with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.